Lesson 23. All for a son. Text A. The desire for a son and heir is common to all mankind. In our country, especially, to have as many male descendants as possible has always been regarded as the greatest blessing in life. The failure to produce a male heir was considered the most unfilial of all unfilial crimes. A man was justified to cast away his wife and take another if she failed to bear him a son. For the rich, the problem could be solved by taking a concubine or several concubines. All traditional ideas die hard. The desire for a son is as strong as ever, and the problem has been aggravated by our one-child family planning policy. Hence, the numerous tragedies and comedies we hear and read so often. There are fathers who drop down in a faint when they hear their wives have given birth to daughters. There are guerrilla couples who roam from place to place, dodging family planning officials to give one birth after another until they finally have a son. But more often we hear of tragedies of wives being ill-treated by their husbands and by their parents-in-law because they failed to give birth to sons. Recently, I saw a photograph in Yongcheng Evening showing a woman with a baby in her arms appealing to passers-by in the street. The caption says, she is telling people of her plight of being thrown out into the street with her baby girl by her husband's family, all because she has given birth to a daughter instead of a son. I remember some time ago reading about a man pushing his 3-year-old daughter down a well. Fortunately, the girl was saved by someone who happened to pass by. The man only got 1.5 years imprisonment for attempted murder. To my mind, he was just as guilty as if the girl had really drowned. By comparison, the story of Zhou Chenghu, an ordinary farmer of Changning County in Sichuan Province, arouses more ridicule than indignation. Zhou's parents had died when he was still young, and he was the only son to carry on the family line. He had married early when he was only 20. The first child was a girl, so he tried again, and the second child, born the following year, was also a girl. Zhou was vexed, but still not unduly worried. But when the third birth turned out to be a girl too, he could sit tight no more. He began to consult doctors, quacks, witches, and fortune-tellers. One geomancer told him that his ancestral graves were wrongly located, so he dug up his mother's grave and had her remains reburied. But that didn't seem to help him, as he had a fourth daughter. Now, really desperate, he disturbed the dead again and had his father reburied this time. But it seemed nothing could help, for the fifth was still a daughter. In the meantime, he had incurred upon himself heavy fines for violating family planning laws. Another geomancer told him that the gods would help him if he had a temple archway built. What would he not do as long as he could get a son? So, no expenses were spared, and he did as the geomancer told him. But the gods remained unmoved and gave him another girl. As the newborn baby uttered her first cry upon entering this world, her father began to wail most miserably. He was now a bitterly disappointed and broken man. He became a heavy drinker. He habitually beat up his wife and daughters for no reason at all. He had nothing to live for. He felt he could not look people in the face because he had no son. When the whole village had electric lights installed, he had to go without because he had no money. In fact, his debts ran to 4 figures, and he could see no way of repaying them. Then, one day early this year, after loading himself heavy with drink, Zhou Chenhu ended his own miserable life at the age of 40. Perhaps he was not as guilty as the man who tried to drown his own daughter, but to leave his wife and 6 daughters to fend for themselves, though no crime was certainly not excusable. And all because he had no son. Text B. After ignoring family planning policies and siring 3 girls, Zhang, who lives in a village in Henan province, finally got the son he was waiting for this year. Despite the heavy fines exacted for breaking the regulations on family planning, Zhang was overjoyed. The honest and simple peasant does not hesitate when asked why he so much desired a son. Why? Who'll support me when I get old? Actually, there are some homes for old folks in the village and nearby. But though he supposes they live well there, Zhang still does not believe the old folks are happy. It's just so-so there. Who knows what it'll be like over there when I get old? It's better to have a son, Zhang said. And a son-in-law cannot be depended on to support him, says Zhang. A son-in-law who lives with his wife's family is looked down on by the community. He cannot be expected to replace a natural son. A family nearby has 4 sons. Life became very hard when the 2 older sons got married. However, the 3rd son says he would rather be a bachelor for life than risk having to take in someday his wife's aged parents. As China's family planning program enters the 1990s, traditional ideas on family life are posing the major barriers to limiting China's population. These ideas have formed over thousands of years. The concept of more sons, more happiness still exists in some rural areas, especially in poor and remote ones. For some families, the presence of several sons gives parents a feeling of protection. Families with no boys or few boys may feel intimidated by families with many sons. Another problem the country must face is early marriages. A survey in a town in Zhejiang County shows young people marrying earlier than the law prescribes. Some are engaged by the age of 15. Parents dream of grandchildren, and sometimes they encourage early marriages, ignoring the government's call for marriage at mature ages. Changing these ideas is hard, as tens of millions of peasants are illiterate. Additional information. Wang is a schoolteacher in Shimen in East Sichuan. At 36, he was still a lonely bachelor and was likely to remain one until one day, towards the end of 1988, he happened to read in the matrimonial column of a magazine an advertisement which read, "Young, a woman of 31, who is a family planning officer in a certain township in South Sichuan, seeks a reliable and understanding man for a spouse, having been disappointed in her first love affair by the man she has lost her heart to." Somehow, this advertisement appealed to Wang greatly. After much thought, he plucked up his courage and wrote to this woman, Young. It was the first love letter he had written in his life. To his surprise and great joy, he got a very warm response. Things went so smoothly, in fact, that very soon the woman appeared before him in flesh and blood, with a divorce certificate in her hand to prove that she was a free woman and was sincere in her desire to marry him. Wang could hardly believe in his own luck, and so, with great haste, he said goodbye to his bachelor life. On the wedding night, however, he got a great shock when he discovered that his bride was already 3 months pregnant. But he was a reasonable man, and instead of blaming her, he did his best to console her, assuring her that nothing could alter his love for her. And he was as good as his words. So the newlywed couple lived in harmony and bliss until half a year later, when Yang gave birth to a lovely plump son. Wang cared for the mother and child as if he was the real father. Then, on the day of the full month of the baby, Wang came home from school to find that his wife had prepared a small feast. Overjoyed and touched by this show of affection, he nevertheless admonished her for overtiring herself while secretly congratulating himself for having found such a considerate and loving wife. Then, before he had finished eating and with the wine still warm in his heart, Young suddenly said to him, "Happily we got together, now let us gladly part." Wang could hardly believe his ears. "Please don't talk such nonsense." "I'm not talking nonsense. We have to divorce. To be quite honest, I don't find it easy leaving you like this, and I feel very sad having cheated you. You are a very good man, but I was a happily married woman with a lovely daughter. Our only regret was having no son. What were we to do? I couldn't very well give a second birth, especially as I'm a family planning officer. So my husband and I worked out this plan. We agreed to divorce temporarily, after having made sure I was pregnant again. I had secretly gone to see a doctor, and he had given me hope that it was likely to be a boy, and so we went ahead with our plan. After I put out the advertisement, I got many offers. We picked on you for 2 reasons. First, you are a teacher and therefore are likely to be a reasonable man and would not make things difficult for me. Secondly, you are no longer so young and would not be too choosy and therefore would readily take me. Now you know all. Say whatever you like. Curse me, call me names. All I ask is that you forgive me and let me go back to my former husband." Wang was dumbfounded. In vain he tried to plead and remonstrate and begged her to stay. But Yang was adamant. I still love my former husband. Our divorce was not for real in the first place. If you don't let me go, you can only keep my body, but you can't keep my heart. I had made it clear in my advertisement that I had lost my heart to my first love. In the end, the good, honest Wang had to agree to divorce her and let her go. Left alone again, Wang thought not only of the injury done to himself, but the deceit and trickery on the part of the couple to dodge the law, and the woman was supposed to be some sort of officer of the law, too. Could such a monstrous thing be allowed? Was the force of feudal ideas so much stronger than the forces of law? We may well ask the same questions. Lesson 24. Want to kill yourself? Text A. I wonder whether smoking is as harmful as doctors make us believe it to be. Some of the things they say are really hair-raising, and even if only half of what they say is true, then it is, if not suicidal, at least a self-inflicted chronic disease. This afternoon, our league branch organized a discussion on the harmful effects of smoking and what effective measures should be taken to prevent young people from smoking. According to our form master, 50% of our class smoke, or have smoked at one time or another. If that is true, then all the boys must be smokers, because we make up about 50% of our class. I can hardly believe that. I, for one, certainly don't smoke, though I must admit I did once take a few puffs, just out of curiosity. But you can't call that smoking. The discussion was quite a lively one. The girls, of course, all spoke in one voice against smoking, but for the most part they had nothing original to offer besides repeating what we can read in the papers and popular science magazines. At first the boys listened in glum silence, and I could see boredom and disdain on their faces. Then the crossfire between Fatty and Liu Dandan livened the meeting up. Dandan has always been something of an actress, and in her theatrical manner she went on and on describing how bad a cigarette tastes. Fatty couldn't contain himself any longer, and muttered under his breath, "Heavens, you must be a very experienced smoker." Everybody burst out laughing, and Dandan spluttered with rage. The girls rallied round her and began to attack Fatty. Of course, we could have none of that, and the classroom was soon in uproar. "All right, you boys and girls, that is quite enough. Show some sense." Our form master's firm voice had quite a sobering effect, and order was restored again. "Those who do smoke, please put up your hands." Taken by surprise, nobody made any move. "Come on, there is nothing to fear. This is not for punishment. I only want statistics. I only want information so that we can really find out something about smoking." We looked at each other. First Fatty, then about half a dozen boys raised their hands. Then our form master proceeded to ask each of them why they smoked, and whether they liked smoking. Did they ever try to give it up? Why not? And so on, and so on. Soon he didn't have to ask any questions, as we all volunteered information, and the discussion became very lively and the atmosphere relaxed. Some interesting facts came out. Family and surroundings play a very important part in influencing smokers. All those who smoke come from smoking families or are surrounded by smoking friends and relatives. Films and TV plays also play a part. In the past, only villains smoked and drank. Now heroes also smoke and drink, and heroes now are mostly young people with the spirit of the 80s, fighting feudalism and conservatism. As to those who smoked and have given up, they did so because they didn't enjoy smoking and found it too expensive. Very few people think about health dangers. All those who still smoke admit that they don't derive any greater pleasure out of smoking. Smoking has not become a hardened habit with them, and they could give it up easily if they really wanted to. They just haven't felt any urgent need to do it. A very interesting and rewarding discussion. Those smokers who haven't given much thought to their smoking will, I'm sure, give more thought to it now. Text B. Few people like changing their habits, good or bad, and whether it is smoking, drinking, or overeating, they continue enjoying them to the end, often the bitter end. On every packet of cigarettes and in every advertisement, Americans are warned against the dangers of smoking. Warning: the Surgeon General has determined that cigarette smoking is dangerous to your health. In spite of this, millions of them start smoking or go on smoking. Why? One reason may be that people watch their heroes on TV drinking alcohol, smoking cigarettes, and fighting their way from adventure to adventure. Heroes who seem to fear nothing, neither killing other people nor killing themselves with alcohol and cigarettes. If they are not afraid of the effects of smoking and drinking alcohol, why should John Smith, sitting at home in his armchair watching all this, be afraid? The simple warning on the cigarette packet does not influence his hero's habits either. But even stronger warnings, like showing pictures of smokers who have lost a leg or died of cancer, seem to have no effect on people's smoking habits. Knowing and believing seem to be two different things. The young girl smoking a cigarette in the advertisement runs the risk of dying of cancer in a few years. The smoker sitting next to you may have a heart attack next week. But don't worry. The chance of dying in an accident is just as great. Particularly if enough people agree with one advertiser that driving a car at 212 miles per hour and smoking interesting cigarettes is all that life is really about. Additional information. A. World No Tobacco Day. People in all parts of the world are observing No Tobacco Day. It is the day when the World Health Organization appeals to people to stop using tobacco products. The WHO hopes if people stop smoking cigarettes or chewing tobacco for one day, they will stop permanently. The day includes special observances and award ceremonies in 166 countries. The target group for this year's No Tobacco Day is women. Organizers want to make sure women know the dangers of smoking. Health experts have warned for years that smoking can lead to heart disease, cancer, and other problems. The World Health Organization says diseases linked to smoking kill at least 2,500,000 persons each year. Still, many people find it difficult to stop smoking. One reason is nicotine, a substance found in cigarettes. Nicotine is a drug. The effects of nicotine are similar to the effects of cocaine and heroin. No Tobacco Day is aimed at smokers and those who earn money from tobacco sales, so businesses are asked to stop selling tobacco products for 24 hours. Newspapers are asked not to publish advertisements for cigarettes. Two important developments have been observed in recent years. In industrial countries, the number of smokers has been falling about 1% a year, but in developing countries, the number has been rising 2% a year. This is the result of increased efforts by tobacco companies to sell their products in developing countries. The World Health Organization has approved plans to help reach its goal of a smoke-free world. One urges governments to offer tobacco farmers the chance to earn money by growing other crops. Another involves improved public information campaigns about the dangers of smoking. B.
Yeah, when did you start smoking?
Well, I started when I was about 16, and I really started because I think my family smoked, and that really made me want to, somehow it was like growing up.
Yeah.
And, of course, my friends around me were smoking, and when we left school, we'd go over the park and have a quick cigarette. And, I do remember when I first started that I didn't really draw cigarettes at all because I didn't really know how to do it, and I didn't think it was very pleasant. And it's only as time goes by that you get more and more involved in that process until finally you realise that you can't give up. And in fact, when I first started, I used to pretend that I was so hooked that I couldn't give up because it was like being a child. It was like being a grown-up. You know, grown-ups say they can't give up smoking. They wish they couldn't smoke, and I used to pretend to say that. And of course, by the time it really happens, it's too late. It doesn't mean the same thing anymore. You actually want to give up, but you can't.
I've smoked since I was 18, and I started out, as you did, sort of socially. And it wasn't a lot of fun to start with.
Right.
It's quite embarrassing, sometimes, you know. You get smoke in your eyes, and your eyes will water. It's a dead giveaway that you've only just started. And I didn't care for the taste all that much, but everybody, people smoked. I mean, I started smoking a long time ago, before anything was known about cancer. And it was just the thing to do. And as you said, it was being grown up. It was drawing that line, you know. I am now grown up. I should think I started at 9. I really started my first year at university. Everybody else smoked. It was just the thing to do. And now, not so many people smoke. It seems to me that it was an awful waste of time and money. But my father smoked, and my mother didn't, so it was always a split thing in the house. I don't know. I think it probably just was a social habit more than anything else.
Like most people, I started smoking at school, foolishly. I was offered cigarettes by other children, and in those days I suppose smoking was the equivalent of drug-taking today, that it was considered fashionable and sophisticated and adult to smoke. Lesson 25. Don't they feel ashamed of themselves? Text A. We were at the terminus, and as a bus had just left, there were only the two of us. We're sure to get good seats, I thought to myself confidently. But soon there was a crowd, and nobody seemed to have the least intention of forming a line. In fact, everybody was trying to crane forward, and soon they were almost standing in the middle of the road so as to be in the best strategic position. I realized I had been over-optimistic about getting seats, so I said to Granny, "You get on in your own good time, Granny. I'll get on first to find a seat for you." She was terrified at the idea. "Oh, no, you don't. Never mind about the seat. The important thing is to get on the bus. I'll never manage it by myself." Looking at all the young men around us, I realized Granny was right. All the young men had intent faces, just like soldiers ready to go into action. And when a bus did finally arrive, everybody rushed forward to meet it so as to be just in front of one of the doors, and people ran along with the bus, keeping as near to a door as possible, until finally the bus came to a halt and the doors opened. The mad scramble that followed defies description. It was almost a free-for-all. People fought, jostled, pushed, and elbowed their way forward, accompanied by shouts and curses all round. I had great difficulty in pushing Granny into the bus. I was really afraid that her old bones might crack. I had a lot of difficulties in getting on myself, too. People behind me pushed, people beside me elbowed, and people in front of me seemed to have formed a block of solid wall. Actually, there was plenty of room in the bus. After all, the seats had been taken. People who got on just stood near the doorway and refused to move in, blocking the way for all those behind who had not yet got on. After what seemed to me to be an eternity of pushing and shouting, all the passengers managed to get on, and the doors finally closed. I looked around, hoping somebody would have the decency to give up his seat to Granny. But they all seemed to be glued to their seats, those elegantly dressed young men and ladies, looking happy and smug, apparently proud of the fact that they were smart enough to be ahead of everybody else. After the bus started, Granny began to wobble on her feet, and I had to hold her tight to prevent her from falling. "Will someone be kind enough to give the old lady a seat?" The conductress called out several times, meeting no response. Some seemed to have suddenly dozed off, and others seemed to be captivated by something very interesting outside the bus window. In the end, it was a middle-aged lady who stood up and gave Granny her seat.
After thanking the lady, I helped Granny sit down and looked at those elegant young people again, trying to detect some traces of shame on their faces. But I found none. Text B. Vietnam. Isn't that a shame? I saw a film on Vietnam. It showed the actual fighting. It looked ridiculous, just a bunch of kids. It was actually embarrassing to watch that. People were actually shooting and shouting. I saw Vietnam. I looked at a map once. I'm concerned with Vietnam if my brother has to go. Otherwise, no. My interest in life is me. It's a shame. I wish I could pick up a newspaper and read it. What I hear about things is heard from other people. I hope I'll make it. I think it's marriage to someone who is successful. Highland Park, a couple of kids. I'm not too crazy about children, though. You're sitting in a room, and all of a sudden 5 kids come in and they'll go to another girl in the room. Same with dogs. I'm worried about the next couple of years. Here, I'm putting all this time and feeling into this relationship with Stephen, and to have it not work out, it would be terrible. I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably find someone else and be just as happy. We have to have a war. There's been wars through all the ages. Apparently everyone gets enjoyment out of it. If we removed this part from man, it would be boring. Otherwise things would be sort of dull. I love my building. I just love it. If I'm on a bus going to my mother's, I look at these people and get a nauseous feeling. On Michigan Avenue, I respect them more. Home gives me a sick feeling. It's a shame blacks don't like me, and children don't like me, and dogs don't run up to me.
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听啊，点儿看。